Hi, I'm Neil Slade. Welcome to Tickle Your Amygdala and Brain Radar Radio. In this series, we talk about all things brain, but especially tickling the amygdala, self-control and stimulation of that master compass right in the middle of your brain. Your amygdala controls your emotions, not only the popularized circuits of negative emotion, but more importantly, those feel-good emotions of pleasure and reward. And once you know how it works, you can turn on this part of your brain whenever you like to turn on new levels of creativity, intelligence, and pleasure. And not just when you've won the lotto. This show is a leisurely walk with Dr. Julia Liu, artist and PhD in the history and philosophy of science, and yours truly, where we walk and talk in detail about the real flying broom that periodically flies off its hook in our living room and into the middle of the floor, an event which we've witnessed once or twice every year since 2008. That's right, folks, not an imaginary flying broom, but an actual broom that defies the law of gravity and seems to obey its own laws of physics, or perhaps paranormal physics. We've been in the room while this happens, and we've witnessed it for ourselves. And nowadays, it seems that it's not the only thing flying around our house all by itself. On our little stroll, we talk about the nature of consciousness outside of the human brain container, and what this means for you and why it's important to tickle your amygdala forward, out of your reptile brain and into your frontal lobe's cooperative brain magic circuits. Julia also explains the inexplicable, how the Chinese stock market defied the government censors by manipulating the trade prices on the 23rd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. All right, so what's today? Today's Thursday, June 7th?
June 7th, yeah.
So we had a conversation about all these things connecting today. So let's kind of go over that again because I think it was kind of interesting. So we have this broom in our living room that periodically flies off the wall. And it's a, just to give you a little background, I had bought this, it's a decorative broom. It's not really a functioning broom that you'd sweep the floor with. It's just kind of a decoration. And I bought it a few years ago when the last Harry Potter book came out. And they had a big, they had like 3,000 people show up at the local bookstore. You know, because it was a new Harry Potter book and, you know, kids show up and their parents and their people are dressed up like witches and things. But right across the street at East High School in Denver, the woodshop teacher had his lathe, and on the front lawn of the bookstore on this night of celebration, as it were, he was making wands with his lathe. And then he had also hung up three decorative brooms that he made. And they, in his eye, looked like brooms that some of the Harry Potter characters would ride on to play that sport called Quidditch. And I thought the brooms looked pretty cool. They were really interesting. And
they're big too.
Yeah, and I just thought I don't know, the brooms had some sort of power in one way or another.
They do.
Knowing what I know about wands, the real wands that I wrote about recently in one of my own books. And so I ended up buying these three decorative brooms from this woodshop teacher. And they, I guess if anyone's interested, they were, about, I don't know, between, I think, $65 and $100 each. So I hung them up in my living room. One I tied to the wall with a wire above a, what do you call that room divider? It's kind of like an arch in between the living room and the dining room.
I don't know. It's internal wall.
I don't know.
Dry wall.
I don't know, but you know, it's kind of like a little archway that comes down from the ceiling and in from the side. So it's a room separator kind of thing, but it's built
into the plaster. So one of them is wired up permanently above that, and then I've got one broom hanging vertically on the inside of the room divider, and then right on the other side of the arch I have another broom. So three brooms, one above and one on each side. And the ones on each side are wedged into place with these screw-in hooks that you screw into the wall. It's like a fork, you know, like a two-prong fork.
But they're big.
Yeah, they're big. It's about a
huge inch, and the solid.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're very solid, and they're coated with rubber. And what you do is you would take like a broom, or you know, I mean, you could hang up a rake up, and the handle is tightly wedged in between these two prongs of the fork. And in the case of my decorative brooms, they're wedged in place fairly tightly, so the only way, you can't just pull them off very easily. It would take a lot of force to pull them off. What you have to do is you have to kind of push up first.
That's the only direction you can pull off.
Yeah, you have to push up, yeah. And then you can pull them out, and then they'll kind of loosen up. But they're on there pretty tight. So, what we've noticed in the 3 years since I've had those brooms, I guess it's about 3 years.
No, 4 years. First time follow-up is 2008.
Oh, okay.
January 2008.
Right. The first time it happened, it woke up. There was this big, loud bang that woke us up at about 1 in the morning or so. It was so loud, I thought somebody was like breaking down the front door. But we both bolted up in bed. And that happened, I think, twice.
Yeah, twice when we were in bedroom.
Twice when we were in the bedroom. And what happened was the broom apparently just launches itself off the wall and ends up in the middle of the room.
Yes.
Right? And, I mean, the house doesn't shake. There's no way for that broom to get loose by itself from the hook. I mean, literally the house would have to be falling down in its foundations.
And, or earthquake.
Yeah, we don't have anything like that, so there's just no explanation. Apparently, the broom just pops off of this thing. And it wouldn't be the result of like a tension or spring action, because the tension remains constant on it. Expansion of the wood, I've never heard of anything like that ever happening. So we don't have any kind of ready explanation for it. It just seems to be some something we don't understand why this broom launches itself. But it happens at least once a year, sometimes a couple times a year. So we were in bed, it happened twice. The next time Julia was, the second time was you were in the living room, right?
No, the third.
Okay, so the third time you were...
I couldn't sleep, so I went to the living room. It's at night, so I went to the living room, lie down on the sofa. And then I just feel tight, you know, like air is very heavy or something.
Yeah.
And then I heard this pong.
This loud sound?
Yeah.
Pong?
Pong. Something like something fall on the floor. Pong. So I got up, look at the broom 2 feet from my head.
Oh.
I was terrified. First, I thought, maybe Neil make a practical joke on me. So maybe he had this remote control or something. So I went back
you
to sleep.
You thought I'd wired up a remote control?
Yes.
on the broom hook?
Yeah, so I went back to sleep. The next morning, I asked you, I say, no, check the broom.
Yeah.
So I look at
it. Oh, we have to wait for the traffic. Okay, so you were on the couch, which was about 10 feet away from where the broom had been hanging,
yes,
up on the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you heard this noise, and then you saw the broom lying near your head?
No,
on the floor near the couch.
Yeah, the couch, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, in the middle of the night, no one in the room, how could a broom come up? So I thought maybe Neil play a practical joke on me.
Yeah.
Maybe the first two times he did that too. So next morning I ask you, you said, check the broom. So yeah. I look at, there's no electronic device or nothing. Just old, common, normal broom.
Yeah. So then you realize that there was, well, I told you it wasn't a trick, and it certainly...
Yeah, I know.
All right, so that happened, and then I was sleeping on the couch one night, and while I was in the room, it came off the wall, and the room was dark, and I'd been using my computer, so the coffee table is next to the...
couch.
Next to the couch, and I was falling asleep and turned the lights off. And I heard this bang, and I thought I had accidentally knocked the computer off of the table. So in the dark, I reached over and saw that the computer was still there, and I thought, well, okay, that's okay. And I didn't give it much thought. I don't know why I didn't get up to investigate. I thought maybe I had hallucinated that sound as I was falling asleep. But the next morning when I woke up, then I realized the crash was the broom, because the broom was now sitting in the middle of the living room again. And then let's see. Then
the it happened again when Christy came to visit.
My ex-girlfriend from college came over to visit, who I'm still friends with, who we're still friends with. She lives close by. And so she visited me for an hour, and then that night the room launched itself off the wall. And I begin to think that, oh, it's a ghost of a girl who had committed suicide in my apartment before I moved in. And I didn't know this for years until my neighbor Carl told me the story, how this woman had killed herself in my apartment. So then I thought, okay, the broom started coming off the wall when Julia started spending the night, right? And then it also came off the wall when my ex-college girlfriend. So I thought, oh, it's the ghost of the woman who's jealous. And it still may be, actually, now that when we get around to that point of why is the broom flying off the wall, it could still be her, but I thought maybe it was a woman who was still hanging around the house as a ghost, had somehow decided that I was her boyfriend, right? And then when another woman came into the house, she got jealous and protested by, you know, flinging this broom off of the wall in a... What do they call that in ghosts, when ghosts do stuff like that? You know, I know it's haunted, but there's another word for it. What is it?
I don't know.
Everybody knows what
it is. I don't know.
When things start flying around the room. A poltergeist. Thought it was poltergeist activity. Right? So that's what I thought. And then, about 10 days ago, the broom came off the wall again.
But this time it was daytime.
And you were, it was
daytime.
It was the first time in the daytime, that's right.
Yeah,
and you were in
the office. I heard a pong, so I went out to check what happened. I see the broom in the middle of the living room, and both Orphie, Claire, and Chloe look at the broom.
Now, but we have to clarify that now it's the reincarnation of Orphie and Chloe.
The new
Orphie and Chloe, and they're only a year old, and they're smaller. Well, at least Orphie is a bit smaller than he was previously. And again, they've never shown any interest in the broom. They don't go near the broom.
And they couldn't do it.
And I think it's impossible that they knocked it off the wall. I mean, they would have had... You didn't hear them making a racket.
No, they have to try very hard. Target that and exactly force move the broom.
They'd have to move it up first.
Yeah, straight up. That's very hard, even for humans.
Right.
So.
And before, when the broom has come off the wall, the dogs were in the bedroom with us anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So the dog explanation, I don't think, is plausible.
You're listening to Brain Radar Radio and Tickle Your Amygdala. Visit at brainradar.com. And now back to our conversation.
But in any case, however it gets off the wall, and it seems to be this kind of supernatural thing, it came off 10 days ago, and we were trying to figure out
why.
Why? What's the message here?
If it was
previously, I thought it was the jealous woman right? But nothing had really changed. I didn't have anyone visiting. So that explanation was not fitting this particular scenario. So my observation this morning was triggered by a gift that my friend Jeff Chockelman, who incidentally I have written about in the Book of Wands, because he's a real character in that book. Jeff came over and he gave me a pocket knife, a keychain knife. And the reason he did that was because I was looking at someone else's Vitronox pocket keychain knife yesterday at the coffee shop. And I was admiring it. And Jeff says, oh, well, you can get those for $6 at the Army Navy Surplus. And I found that hard to believe because I had one that I had lost and I paid about $40 for it. And he says, no, they're $6. Well, sure enough, Julia wakes me up this morning. She comes into the bedroom and says, Jeff brought this. And she hands me a brand new Vitronox keychain knife that Jeff had bought for me as a gift. And I was just really totally surprised, pleasantly surprised. He's a great guy anyway, very generous fellow. And I got up and got dressed and we went for a walk. And I said, well, my luck seems to be changing, right? I've had a pretty good couple of days. Yesterday, I had a bicycle that I had fixed up to put on sale. And I couldn't sell it for about a week. And then finally, all of a sudden, everybody starts... I was getting call after call, right?
I know, yeah.
It was out of the clear...
Four people want it.
Yeah, all of a sudden, after it's been online for a week, all of a sudden, everybody wants it at the same time. And I sold the bike, right? Mm-hmm. So that was good. I had lost my old Vitronox knife. Jeff gave me a new knife. What else happened yesterday that was... Oh, I know. Julia, just finished a big 100-yard-long...
Painting,
right?
Yeah.
And we wanted to hang it up to display it and photograph it. And we had a lot of trouble finding a place, right?
Yeah.
We went to a church. They weren't
charging us $300.
Yeah, they wanted $300 to rent the room for a couple hours to hang up our painting. And, you know, that was ridiculous.
But we find that this is high school.
So East High School agreed to let us use their baseball diamond backstop fence, which is about 200 yards long. And yesterday, I figured out a method by which I could hang the painting on the fence. And we tested that yesterday. And that worked out. So that was so all of a sudden, good things were happening. Like, it was like the, you know, one good thing after another. And my observation was that my luck had changed because just previous to that, all kinds, just the day before, it was like things were getting worse and worse. And I'll give you an example. I bought a new hat yesterday, a new straw hat, right? And,
so happy about that.
I was very happy about the hat. And I came home. I wore it once, came home, and the next thing I know, Irfy was eating it for lunch in the backyard, and he had completely shredded my new hat. Right?
And also, Irfy eated another hat. That was within 10
Oh, yeah. Yes, very, my favorite hat. Another one of my favorite newsboy hats.
From Canada.
That we brought all the way back from Seattle and also Canada. He had also gotten that and destroyed that. And but we can't blame everything on Irfy because other things had gone wrong. I know. Yesterday I was trying to sell the bicycle. And here, let's go over to the bench in the
bicycle
water here.
Broke.
And right, so the people come over to look at the bicycle, right? And I spent a couple hours on it, was ready to sell it. And they show up, and the derailleur gets caught on the back wheel, and I destroyed the derailleur in about 2 seconds. And here I was ready to sell the bike. So that was a bad thing that happened. 2 days before that, pots were okay.
We had plants, yeah.
I came home and I have this ceramic pumpkin that I've had for 15 years or 20 years that I keep on the front porch, and it was broken. And Julia, what's your explanation for the broken pot, Julia?
I think I was taking photo on the porch. Maybe I accidentally touched the stone under the
You didn't pumpkin. Touch the pot, you mean?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
I thought I touched the stone because...
Oh, but that stone is so heavy.
But I couldn't find... No, I couldn't touch the pot. I was taking photo on the porch.
Yeah.
You know, and I was not near the pot at all.
Right.
I don't know.
So the pumpkin, the ceramic pumpkin fell off and broke.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so that happened. But that's not the only thing that jumped up. I walked into the bathroom, I think, the next morning, and there was dirt all over the bathroom floor. And so I asked Julia, why is there... I said, you knocked the pot. We have 2 plants in pots on top of the toilet bowl, right?
Yeah.
And I glued a wooden frame to hold the pots so they couldn't slide off or be knocked off, right? So the top of the toilet bowl has got like a little wooden cage that keeps the pots in. So I said to Julia, how did you knock the pot off the toilet bowl?
Now, I was in the tub. I couldn't knock off. But I was using this spa, so I thought maybe the spa make this...
The vibration.
Yeah.
You're talking about a whirlpool, bubbly
spa
that's in the bathtub.
So I thought maybe that sound could cause
the
plant
to jump
up.
No way.
But I got...
We use that all the time.
I know, but when I got up, I noticed I put the plant back. I noticed that there is a base under that.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to slap over or something.
No, I mean, you'd really have to knock that pot to knock it off of the top of the...
I know.
You have to pick it up and lift it over this little barrier cage thing. But yet...
I know,
You were in the tub,
that.
And while you were in the tub, it fell on the floor.
Off, yeah.
That's really bizarre. Okay, so then it happened again.
The speaker.
Oh, yeah, all right, so the broom flies off the wall 10 days ago, and the next day, there's a speaker...
cover.
It's
those black thing, you know.
I don't know what it's called. It's like not a baffle. Hey, look! The thing got knocked over. That must be us. That must be our vibes, huh?
We should have said... Down.
Well, that's a whole nother... We're looking at some very ugly bamboo sculptures at the back lake at the Botanic Gardens. There's a waterfall in the background.
They look like a burnout.
This is terrible. They put these...
Ugly,
they slap together these bamboo weavings that just look like gigantic bird's nests, but not even that pretty. And one of them got knocked over.
And the worst part is the base. It's totally black plastic thing.
This ugly sculpture exhibit at the Botanic Gardens. Anyway, that's what we're talking about.
I hate it.
All right, but it got knocked over, so maybe that's our thought, because we don't like this stuff.
Our intention.
Yeah, very much.
You know, I think people's intention do change the world, do change the surroundings, do change the people or animals or plants in their environments.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
The people
here
do not admit that because that's too huge of responsibility. That means everybody has to, you know,
everybody has to
control their thoughts, has to always have good intention. That's very hard for some people.
Well, let me finish.
But I feel that inspiring, you know?
Yeah.
And hopeful.
Okay, so anyway, so what I was pointing out is we had all this bad stuff happen, and all of a sudden... Julia, we're making a radio program.
Okay.
Stop talking about the fish.
Sorry. They're so pretty, though.
Oh, okay, so we're at the lake, and they're pretty goldfish in the water that we're looking at. Hello, fishy. All right, so back to the point of this whole story. So we had this bad luck, and then at a certain point, the luck changed. And things, it was like the direction that we were heading changed, at least my experience, from a negative direction changed to a positive direction, right? Good things were happening instead of bad things. And so there must have been a certain fulcrum point, right, in which everything, in which the energy changed direction. And I was trying to think of, I needed to identify at what point that was. And what did I come up with?
Now, we began to think maybe there is a connection between the energy in the house, or the energy between us, or our thoughts,
well,
or
yes,
orientation.
Yeah, right. So what was the point?
The behavior of the objects in the house.
Okay. So at what point, right? So there was an event. Oh, and I know what the event was. It was when the people came over to buy the bicycle that I had for sale, right?
Can we change it somewhere? It's too hot here.
Oh, all right. So the moment it changed was when I got on the bike to demonstrate the bike to these potential customers, and the derailleur got caught in the reflector, the wheel reflector, and I broke the derailleur. Okay, so that was kind of a calamity. That was the peak of things going wrong. That here I had a bike sale, and as I'm demonstrating the bike, it breaks right in front of these people. So I said to the people, I said, well, I was trying to think of what to do, right? What do I do? Tell them to come back or whatever. And they had driven from pretty far out of town. It was at least a half-hour drive. So I said to the guy, just take the bike. I said, you can have it. I said, it'll cost you $50 to go to the bike store, probably $50 to get a new derailleur put on. And I certainly expected them to say, oh, great, well, thanks a lot, right? And they were going to get a bike for free, you know, and all. It would, instead of costing them $129, which was my asking price, they'd only have to pay $50. But instead of the guy saying that, he says, can you fix it? And I said, well, yeah. He says, I have to go get a new derailleur. He says, well, I can come back. So here the guy was willing to pay me more money, right, if I would just fix it. And I think he was kind of recognizing that I had put all this work into it, and just by an accident, by a bit of bad luck, I was losing my sale. But he sort of empathized with me, right? Maybe in a reaction to me empathizing with him, because I was willing to say, well, I don't want you driven out. It was kind of like our thinking became cooperative. We were looking out for somebody besides ourselves. He was looking out for me, right? And I was kind of looking out for him. And at that point, it seemed like all of my luck changed. And so I went and I got a new derailleur. And sure enough, he came back a few hours later and bought the bike for me for the $129. You know, I was out the cost of a derailleur, which wasn't a whole lot, so I didn't make quite as much, but I still sold the bike. And at that point, there was something else that happened that was good.
Last night?
No, I mean my whole life.
No, you find those.
Oh, I know what it was.
You find it.
You wanted to. You wanted to hang up your painting at East High School, right?
Yes.
We needed a place, and we knew that we could film it on the living room floor, you know, 6 feet at a time. But I said, you know, it would be nice. I think we still need to display it completely unrolled,
yeah,
which would be 100 yards long. And so I went to Home Depot to get something else, and I started thinking about how we would do this. And I invented this clip hanger kind of mechanism, right? And then I came home and I said, let's go to
high school.
Go to the high school, right?
Yeah.
And we tried it out and it worked, right?
Yeah.
So again, you know, I'm not making myself out to be some... Hold on.
Yeah.
Yeah, say that again.
I said, we've been thinking about how to hang the paintings, and we have find a way
for two weeks. We tried duct tape, and that didn't work, right?
Yeah.
And so, but finally, last night, I solved the problem, right? So everything, just the whole direction of how things were kind of laying out for us, went from this kind of accident-prone, negative state,
yeah,
right? And it changed to a positive kind of thing. We were succeeding, and so there seems to be this. It's related
to the balloon.
Well, it is. Well, okay.
The warning.
Well, but our thinking changed from reptilian, right, to cooperative thinking.
Yes.
And the fulcrum seemed to be at that point where I was willing to just give these people the bike.
Yeah.
And they were willing to say, no, we'll come back and we'll pay you what you wanted for it, right? So at that point, that's the break between the reptile thinking and the cooperative thinking that changed the whole vector direction of our experience. Okay? So now what does this have to do with the broom?
You're listening to Brain Radar Radio and Tickle Your Amygdala. Visit at brainradar.com. And now back to our conversation.
So it finally dawned on me, wait a second. Did the broom fly off the wall because we were having agitated reptilian thinking? No. Things were not going bad. Because remember when it flew off the wall, we were trying to think of...
Why?
And yeah. We weren't fighting, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't any bad stuff happening at that time. It flew off the wall before the bad stuff started, before the bad stuff started happening.
So it's maybe a warning sign of some sort.
It seems to be, it predicted this chaotic period by about 10 days.
Yeah.
Right? Now, whether or not we were making this negative space happen, right, that caused pots to fall off of tables and things to break and not having things work out for us, whether we were the cause of that or not, the broom flying off the wall seemed to predict that there would be this change in energy.
Yeah.
That it was predicting this negative
events.
These negative events. I don't know how important that is, but it seems that may be an explanation.
But it's important in the sense that, we got to pay attention to the behavior of objects around us.
So the broom...
They're not just dead inertia, what is it called?
They're not dead inertia.
Yeah.
They're not just inert. There's a consciousness connected with the unusual and unexpected movement of physical objects.
No, I think a few days ago I was listening to this physicist talk about quantum physics.
Yeah.
His theory, his hypothesis is this. Maybe at the beginning of the Big Bang, just short after the Big Bang explosion.
Yeah.
There's a period, the entire universe is in consciousness.
Who's this, Penrose?
I heard from the guy who worked with Penrose, who was,
Was this one of the two guys I put in the tickle book?
I don't know which guy you put in.
Oh, they're putting lights in. We were wondering why you drained the pond.
What was that?
We were wondering why this was not filled with water.
Just for cleaning.
Oh, just for cleaning.
But there will be water, right?
Yeah.
Are you putting a new... Oh, you're just changing the lights.
Yeah,
I'm
just putting new lights in.
Ah. No, I don't think they put fish in this one.
It's had fish in a time.
Has it?
Most of the time they stay in the cave.
Oh.
Wow.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We can stand here.
Okay. So what was this guy saying about... What was he talking about?
He was talking about a consciousness.
Yeah.
Quantum consciousness. They're in the history of philosophy, history of medicine or physics, there are many people try to understand the consciousness, the nature of consciousness. And he was one of those guys. I think Penrose was one of those guys. He said that at the beginning of the universe, I mean, very short after the Big Bang, the universe is in consciousness.
Yeah.
So, and then collapsed into this physical world. But there always that a prime consciousness in the universe. If that's true, then consciousness is not a unique thing human have, you know? Could be in all this animals.
Oh, consciousness is not a unique attribute of human brains.
No, yeah.
Okay.
People used to connect it with the human brain. Yes, human brain has a consciousness, but according to him, we only have a consciousness moment 40 times a second.
Yeah.
40 times in every second, we have a consciousness moment and then collapse into this non-consciousness state.
Okay.
And then, you know. So we are not, if that's not the unique attributes of human brain, which means everything else in the universe have their own form of consciousness.
Oh, so rock.
That's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why we feel this connection.
Okay, so this reminds me of what Dr. Lawrence Blair said, because his point when I was talking with him, and he was talking about the new paradigm being that consciousness affects physical reality. In other words, how you think has an impact upon what you perceive as the physical universe. So that ties in with what you were saying this quantum physicist was proposing. That consciousness exists, apart from human brains.
Yes. And also,
there's a tie between physical reality and what we experience as consciousness. They're not separate.
I was excited because of that. Because
why?
If you think about it, if that doesn't depend on human brain,
yeah.
Which means even your brain dies, which
yeah.
Human dies, your brain dies,
right.
Your consciousness can escape from the brain back to the universe and still exist.
Oh, that's a big question.
That means actually our consciousness.
But it may not be the same as when the brain's consciousness.
Maybe not, but maybe. You know, the essence may be the same because if we all relate to this universe consciousness, which occurred at the beginning of the Big Bang, which means all human consciousness, all consciousness of everything else are connected or can go back to the beginning of the universe, which means there will be quantum entanglement back to 40 or whatever
billion
years ago. Do you know what that means? That means because that quantum entanglement, our consciousness won't just disappear. It will be still together, which means reincarnation is possible.
Oh.
And it's not only possible, it's the necessary consequences, you know? Which means all the people live here. We have to, you know, almost mandatory to take care.
Mandatory.
Mandatory to take care each other, to take care of the animal, the planets.
Because we're coming back whether we want to or not.
You are not. Yes. So.
Well, I'm not coming.
So that's
back.
For.
I told you
that's
that,
totally yeah. For a peaceful, beautiful, you know, loving world. So that's why I hope that's true. I'm all for that physical theory or quantum theory. That's why I'm so interested in quantum consciousness, quantum physics these days, you know. Every time I've been listening those Stanford professors' lecture on quantum physics. I've been listening to Penrose's lectures. I've been listening to all those guys when I was painting my picture. That's why my painting is so beautiful.
Oh, and with that, we'll end this delightful conversation with Julie Noodle and Niles Abercrombie. Until next time, remember, keep tickling your amygdala.
That's pretty good.
Well, we can't sign off yet because there's a point to this whole story. And that point being what? No, I forgot. I had it in my brain seconds ago. Let's see.
Yeah, pay attention to the warning signs.
You got it. Oh, yeah, that's right. Pay attention to the warning signs. Okay, so we finally figured out that the broom, potentially, now this is just speculation at this point because we haven't really noted so much this idea that the broom was a predictor, a warning of a negative space to come.
For negative energy.
Negative energy. It was kind of like a, you know, why is that important? Well, if the broom can transcend the limitations of time and space and actually see the future and say, hey, there is a dangerous period that's coming up and you need to be alert, right? That's why the broom potentially may be flying off the wall as a warning sign. So if we have something like that in our house, the question then is, what do other people have in their houses? And I would say it's possible that everybody may have
their own broom.
Of,
would it be their computer?
Well, I don't know.
Light bulb or?
Well, the idea is to look for unusual and unexpected movement of physical objects, right? So, yeah, so that's the question. What kind of broom
you have?
Flying broom do you have in your house? And I think probably people may have those things and they just don't see them. They haven't asked that question. Oh, I know what it was. Marvin and I were looking, you know, lots of the time you can have something like right in front of your face and not see it. Right? It may be of relative importance. Of some importance, be right in front of your nose, and yet you don't see it. So Marvin and I were looking at the little Windows network connections icon in the bottom right-hand corner of Windows XP, and it tells you are connected at 52 megabytes per second on the laptop. But on a desktop computer, it says you're connected at 100 megabytes per second. Well, this is clearly not the case, right? No one's connected at 100 megabytes. Maybe if you've got some very fancy something, but we're talking about home computers. So neither the laptop nor the desktop Windows computer icon indicated your true connection speed. And so Marvin and I start asking ourselves, what is that number then? We could not find any instance of anyone even asking that question online, and we tried to ask it in all these different ways. Nor could we find an answer, not even on Microsoft. So this number, this connection speed icon, millions of people look at this every single day, and yet we can't find any evidence that anyone has asked that question, what is this number? Nor can we find the answer. So that kind of illustrates the point in one way, that you can have your nose right in front of something and it's completely outside of your awareness or consciousness. The idea being that you may have a flying broom in your house and you're not seeing it.
And I'm also thinking, you know, even you don't have one, you can create one. Okay, let me explain. I've been thinking, why broom flying, you know? Why not anything else in our house flying?
You are listening to Brain Radar Radio and Tickle Your Amygdala. Visit at brainradar.com. And now back to our conversation.
You know, not a pencil, not a pen.
Well, we had pots.
The speaker.
Yeah.
But I think
so we've got other things now starting to fly around.
Okay. But I think particular the broom flying, yeah. Maybe because we assign that meaning to broom. you know, because in our mind, broom is somehow connected with this magic power.
Oh.
Not only us, I mean, for generations, people always connected the broom with that. And you said that you bought this broom at that,
at the Harry Potter.
Harry Potter thing.
Book signing.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy who made this broom probably deeply
he's thinking
believe,
that it's a magical
yes,
device.
Believe in the power of broom.
Mm.
So his thought, you know, in the process of creating, his thought affect the result. That's what I'm thinking.
Ah, I see.
So this broom maybe did have some kind of mystical power within
it's
it
an archetype.
Because of our yeah.
Well, if we had a flying tomato. It wouldn't have a strong a symbolic significance.
Yeah, after the past began to fly, the first thing we thought was the ghost, you know?
Yeah.
But if broom somehow can fly by itself because it had a magic power itself, but at least that's in many people's mind.
Yeah.
You know, when I call my friend, okay, remember that day the broom followed down, almost hit my head. I was, first I thought you did something, and I found out you didn't do anything, you know, it just a simple, like a fork, like some device put that broom on, you know,
uh-huh.
Nothing electronic. So I called my friend. I really got scared because my undergraduate study was in physics.
Yeah.
So all the physics I know couldn't explain anything like this. So I was sort of, this event could change my whole concept of physical object, physical world. I just couldn't explain.
You were freaking out because the
yeah,
was
yeah, because it was flying so on me. And you, I asked you, did it ever happen before? No, before I came to the house, this never happened before.
Yeah.
So I thought somehow the flying broom is connected with me.
Well, very well.
I really got scared. So I called my friend. I have this friend I knew for like...
Who did you call?
9 years, Ginger.
Oh, Ginger.
Yeah. Ginger, you know, when I was in Laos.
Yeah, I know who she was. She was your landlord
Ginger
and friend.
Was, yeah, Ginger had
so
this,
what did she say?
30-acre land with a lake, and she let me live there for my law school years. It was quite beautiful, you know, and
so what did she
huge.
Say?
And she, the reason I call her, because she had... I think one of her grandmother was an American Indian.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know they have all kind of theory to explain this
they're
kind of thing.
They're more mystically
yeah.
tuned.
So I called her and I
Joe.
Said, I said, I must be shaking. So she said, calm down, Julia. Nothing. Don't worry. It's not you. You know, and I have some mystical force in the air. You can always make peace with them.
Oh.
If they have that magic power, they have consciousness. They
yeah.
can understand you.
Okay.
So I just closed my eyes, prayed. I said, whoever you are, I'm making peace with you. You know, I'm your...
And then it stopped flying. We had three incidences in a row.
And after that, remember, you tried to film it. You put the
camera... Well, it quieted down
for... But nothing happened.
It quieted
yeah,
down
yeah,
for many
yeah,
months.
Yeah,
until it happened again. So you made peace with it.
So I'm a friend. I just here. And if you care about, you know...
Well, listen, most people are not going to... You know, some people listening to this will think about...
That's
if
totally
have,
crap.
If they have, well, a lot of people will think
I
that,
know.
Right? So, you know,
but I didn't.
Is this is this an important thing to think about? Do you think?
Of course, you know, if something suddenly, you know, you assume has no life, no, what is it called?
Oh well, you know what, Steven Snyder. Remember the piano tuner, the guy who I interviewed for the book.
He said everything
has consciousness.
Yes.
He says, and the consciousness of one piano is different from the consciousness of another, depending upon who is working, the materials. He says the consciousness of one instrument is different than another. And so He has to tune each piano individually, right, to find the best
yes.
tuning for that instrument because it's a unique individual.
And the piano has individuality, had personality, unique personality.
Yeah.
So
well, he said consciousness.
So that's unique consciousness.
And so Stevie Wonder picked Steven to tune his pianos because he said he did the best job of all these dozens of different tuners. He liked the sound of Steven's tunings the best. So Stevie Wonder hired him. And Steven is telling us that each instrument has its own individual consciousness. So I think that's the important message here, that we tend to look at physical objects as being these inanimate objects. And here Steven Snyder and our flying broom is telling us, no, there is a consciousness associated with these physical objects, and your interaction with that object is modified about your thinking and your association with that object on a level of consciousness.
No, I think
is that too complicated.
No, I think you know, the broom flying in our house, there may be some strange things, unexplainable things happening in some other people's house.
Yeah.
They didn't pay attention, or they try to, you know, ignore it or explain away why.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fit their framework
yeah.
of the world.
So what we're saying is, no, these things can happen.
If you have an open mind, then you will see a lot of things.
Yeah, and there is a reason for these unusual incidents. It's just not a freak accident. There's a potential of time travel, of that someone or something is trying to give you a warning of, let's say, a hard time ahead, that these things are actually have a purpose to help you survive better.
Okay, I have some thoughts about this. You know, I'm from China. I know in China, the Orthodox philosophy. Or the, you know, the, what is it called? The government philosophy. Governmental philosophy.
Yeah.
Or the...
Conservative.
Norm of... is so-called pure materialism.
Okay. Meaning what?
Meaning there's nothing besides this physical world. When they say physical world, mean the world we can see, touch, or smell, whatever.
So this pure material...
There's nothing beyond our five senses.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing beyond, you know, everything we see. And they call that scientific.
Ah.
Okay. So if they say something...
Let's go. I just don't want those people on our recording.
So they when they say something not right, they say, it's not a scientific. So, but what I'm thinking is, actually, their definition of scientific is too narrow. And it's totally wrong.
Oh.
I mean, if you look, they're looking at the science in, like, say, 200 years ago.
Newtonian
physics.
Yeah.
But that's all outdated by Einstein theory, by quantum physics.
Yeah.
And if you look at the current, especially the advantaged, I mean, the cutting-edge scientists'
yeah.
research,
yeah.
then you will know at the quantum physics level, especially those physicists that concentrate on consciousness or you know, whatever, the connection between spiritual world and physical world, you would know that the real scientific, or one of the scientific theory anyway,
mm-hmm.
can easily explain this connection between us and this physical world.
Okay.
So when they say scientific, all they mean is one way. Yeah, you cannot. Yeah. Do you know what happened? Okay, something magic.
Do I know what happened?
Something magic happened in June 4th. You know, June 4th was 23 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, you were
there
talking
about this. There was Tiananmen massacre.
Tiananmen massacre in Tiananmen Square.
June 1st, 1989.
June 1st or 4th?
June 4th.
June 4th, 1989. Tiananmen Square massacre, right?
The government's troop killed hundreds, maybe thousands, protesters.
Yeah.
You know, among them students,
right.
workers, and
right.
citizens.
Most people know what that is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So on this day, 23 years later, the government is still so afraid people will talk about. They don't want people to know what happened. They don't want people to remember that. They try to erase the whole event.
Yeah.
Ugly event from the history book, from people's memory.
All right.
But what happened June 4th,
yeah.
June 3rd, Beijing, you know, June 3rd, Beijing is already summer.
Yeah.
On Chinese calendar, that's summertime.
Yeah.
You know. But June 3rd, that day, during the day.
Oh, the government blocked all these searches on the internet. You couldn't type in the word candle. You couldn't.
You cannot type June 4th. You cannot type 6-4,
yeah.
which is June 4th. You cannot type 89. You cannot type 23.
They were blocking all.
Yeah, block all those numbers.
What numbers again?
23 is 23 years from 1989.
Okay, so they blocked searches with the word 23 in it, with the number
20? Yeah, and 64,
yeah.
which was June 4th, right? And 89.
Okay.
They block all those numbers. But what happened?
Is this rumor, or do you know that this is fact?
That's the fact. You go to the Chinese search engine called Baidu, you know?
And if you type in those numbers, you'll get nothing?
You get to say, based on government policy or something, and this information is not available.
All right, so you actually tried to search those numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
And a lot of people tried, not only me.
All right.
Okay, what happened was on June 3rd, and there is a thunderstorm in Beijing area.
Yeah.
The entire sky is black.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a night.
Right.
Day like a night.
Oh.
And continue on June 4th. Not only thunderstorm, but the hails.
Oh, this sounds like the weather experiment.
That's like this almost like the sky were crying. You know, the sky.
Well, skeptics are going to say, well, that's just a coincidence.
My reading is almost like the sky was crying with the people.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so that by itself could be either
that
way.
Could be, you know,
I'm just trying to represent the skeptical point of view.
I know.
But what else happened?
Can think that almost like people's will, you know. All people so sad, so bad, almost
so
they affected
the consciousness of the population affected the weather.
Just like the experiment you did.
I did an experiment with Art Bell on 1997, which we tried. The idea was to make it rain in Florida, where they were having all these droughts. And so the radio show, I had everyone tickle their amygdala forward and then visualize rain, and the rain clouds came in and it rained 200% greater than the norm, and it rained when there was little chance of rain predicted. So that was my little experiment. But you're saying this may have happened on June 4th in China, where everybody was bummed out about Tiananmen, so that caused a summer severe weather.
Yes.
In Peking,
it's
right?
It's dark.
I'm in Beijing.
Yeah, it's a dark indicator.
But what
you know?
Else happened?
Okay, what else happened, even more magic. Okay, you know the stock market.
The stock market,
In Shanghai, on that day, June 4th, the opening index number.
Yeah.
You know, they always had a stock index number.
Yeah.
The opening number is 43, 98. Okay. 23, 46.
23 years ago was the massacre.
Yeah. And then 46.98. So if you read from back, be 89.64.
You mean if you read the numbers backwards?
Yeah, backwards is 89.64. You know, it's 1989. I'm confused. 89.64. Neil, you confuse me. It's 1989, June 4th.
Yeah.
And it's 23, but 23 was not a backward, but the other four.
Oh,
number.
I see.
Okay. Okay, that's the beginning of the index number. Nobody can change that number.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, even.
Well, it was backwards.
That's okay. And by the
that's a little bit of a stretch.
Okay, hold on. By the end of the day.
Yeah.
No, how stringy those
okay,
those six number government blackout all show up.
But they were backwards the way
yeah,
they
yeah.
showed up.
Means the whole event should be back.
Oh,
should
well,
be
listen,
turned
if,
over.
No. If it had happened forward, you wouldn't have been able to read
it. Means,
was it the stock numbers in New York or in China?
No, in Shanghai.
In Shanghai. So if they were forward, the internet they would have been blocked. Those numbers would so they had to show up backwards, right?
And also the backward in Chinese, you know, Chinese is like you read from back forward.
You read from you right read, to left.
That means, yeah, you're from right to left,
yeah,
the old Chinese way.
All
so
right.
That's not a backward. But also, if you read
people
like
are gonna think
like a
you're
digital,
totally bonkers.
No. But that's not the end of story.
Okay.
By the end of the day,
yeah.
They have this summary. How much is the stock number up or down?
Yeah.
You know, on that day, down.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Down what? 23 points?
No.
What?
46.98 again.
Oh, it's the same number?
Yeah. No, this time it's 64.89. Okay.
What does that mean?
64 is June 4th. June 6, 1989.
Oh!
That's a four number. Four digits.
That was the date of Tiananmen Square.
Yes.
6489.
Yes.
What was 6489?
That's the day, that's the end of the 4th June.
Oh, that was the
June 4th, the ending day result of stock change. Stock number, you know, up or
was
down.
Was it 64.89?
Stock index change. You know,
it yeah. wasn't 6,489, was it?
Is that?
Oh, is, you know, it changed 6,489
points? No. 64.89.
Oh, 64.89.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. The Chinese stock closed on the date of the Tiananmen Square massacre, on the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Down.
Now that's pretty impressive.
64.89.
And that happened on June 4th,
yes.
2012.
Yes.
Now that's interesting. Now I think we can say goodbye and tickle your amygdala.
Okay.
You've been listening to music by Neil Slade and Fred Poindexter in the background. The book Tickle Your Amygdala can be found at www.brainradar.com. It contains 56 interviews with people from all over the world who will explain to you what amygdala tickling is and how they do it. It contains 52 different ways in which people turn on the pleasure and reward circuits of their own amygdala. We'll close out here with a piece by Fred and I from the Cosmic Conversations album, which is also available in the Brain Book and Music Store at brainradar.com. This piece is the title number called Cosmic Conversations and features Fred on steel string guitar and myself on nylon string guitar. Until next time, Brain Explorers, keep tickling your amygdala.
Thank you.